All right. What are you doing, Nick? You moving a piece of paper there?
Sound effects. They're all sound effects, kids.
So this is episode 65 of the Big Planet Comics Podcast. That's a lot of episodes.
That's 65.
It's late at night and a lot of comics came out this week. What's going on, everybody?
Yeah. Comic crazy over here.
My name is Kevin Panetta.
I'm Nick something or other.
Lee Appice.
I'm Jared.
Smith.
Yep.
Yeah, we're here. We're doing this thing. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can look at our Facebook and our Tumblr and our
Twitter.
What is going on Twitter, Jared? Just tell us what's going on the Twitter.
Tweet away, man.
People are tweeting it up. Like tweet.
What are they? What are they tweeting about?
Rock and Robin.
Do people have things to say about things?
No, it's just about birds,
hamburgers.
Oh, Jared I can't remember the name of the bird guide now. Jared runs the Sibley's Twitter.
That'd be amazing.
Cool. So what's been going on with yous guys?
A blur.
A blur of things.
This is what I like to see. I like to see a lot of energy right at the top.
We got lots of energy. There's so many good comics today, but I do not remember what else we got. Oh, I saw Penguin Prison again.
Again? Is this the third time?
Third time.
That's a lot of times to see
Penguin
Prison.
Yeah, this time, though, he was doing a DJ set. So I'm like, this will be cool. And then every few songs would be one of his songs. And he'd pull out a microphone and sing along. I'm like, cool, that works.
That's pretty awesome.
That's interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I guess that's the thing to do. what about you, Nick? What have you been up to?
You know, watching grass grow, watching my neighbor's house get torn down.
Torn down? What happened?
Somebody else bought it.
They're going to build a McMansion?
Yeah.
Oh, terrible.
I've got a nice McMansion coming up right next to my window.
I've got a house. The house behind mine and the house next to that are both about to be torn down.
Oh, really?
It's going to be awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying the sunlight.
briefly.
You know, while I have it.
While you can, until it turns into The Gates.
Yeah.
You guys
remember
the TV show The Gates? A very popular TV show.
Nope.
Is that the one with the little monsters that lived in the basement of somebody's house or whatever?
I think that was The Gate.
Oh, I thought that was The Fraggles.
The Gates was about a gated community where there were like werewolves and vampires.
Oh yeah.
I see. Nobody remembers that. I was talking about it today.
Nobody remembers.
No, they don't. I'm convinced that that they made the first season of that show. And then everybody just forgot to come back and make another season. Like, it didn't even get canceled. They were just like you know what? Whatever. Never mind.
It's too much work.
So what have I been up to?
I was wondering that myself.
I went to a birthday party.
Oh.
And that was fun. And then...
Okay.
A ton of great stories, you guys. Story number one, it was fun. story number two, and then it was over. And then what else have I been doing? I don't know. Nothing.
Car wheels?
No, I can't do car wheels. I'm too fat to do a car wheel.
All right.
Yeah, indeed.
New mission, cartwheel Kevin.
Yeah, cartwheel Kevin. I'm starting a Kickstarter to make me do a cartwheel. But I can't change my lifestyle at all. Oh. I still have to be able to eat a bunch of cheeseburgers and not do any exercise.
Well, that's why you need a Kickstarter.
Yeah, I just get a bunch of people to just flip me over.
That's what I was going to help you do. It'd be amazing.
like I was a hamburger. Okay, well, that's what we've been doing.
Stuff.
Yeah, should we get it? Let's do some news.
Yes. Why not?
All right.
All right, everybody. We got some news here. Coming up first, we got some more exciting Marvel Now announcements.
Uh-oh.
First of all, we got Uncanny X-Men. Who knew that was coming?
Nobody ever.
A shocking addition to the Marvel Now line. It's going to be by Bendis, another shocker, and Chris Bachalo, who has never done Uncanny X-Men.
and Bendis, of course, is writing all new X-Men, which we're going to talk about later in the show.
And this comic features Cyclops and his crew of Magneto and Magic, and they all have kind of redesigned costumes. So it's kind of interesting.
Kind of like... So in the new Marvel Universe, following this event that just happened, there are two X-Men teams, one led by by Wolverine that takes place at a school, and then there's one led by Cyclops.
Yeah, and then there's one led by Cyclops from the past.
That's true. We will talk about that a little bit more later. And then there's one that's led by Professor X's son?
David.
And one led by Storm? Is that what X-Men is about, right?
Oh, is that happening too?
Adjectiveless X-Men? That's just still coming out.
Oh, it's not starting with a new number one?
No, again, people forgot to cancel it, restart it.
It's a Marvel Then book.
Yeah, but there's a new creative team on that with writer Seth Peck, who I don't know.
Oh, Seth Peck did something good, but I can't remember what it was.
It's drawn by Paul Azaceta.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Yeah, Paul Azaceta cool. just drew the... Oh, well, Seth Peck and Paul Azaceta are the guys that did the last issue of X-Men.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
Paul Azaceta's art looks like Chris Samnee, so congratulations, crazy. Marvel.
Yeah. Right. And another one, we got Fearless Defenders by Cullen Bunn and Will Sliney, who I don't know.
Well, you know Cullen Bunn.
Yeah, I know Cullen Bunn.
Cullen Bunn did Six Gun and has been writing Venom. After yep. Remender departed, and is writing Wolverine now too, I think, right?
Something like that. Oh, he is for like a couple more issues.
Yeah,
but this is kind of surprising since Defenders just got canceled after 12 issues,
and seemingly was canceled because it was not a very popular book.
No, every time they try a new Defenders book, it seems to get canceled very fast. But this one seems kind of interesting. It's like all the kind of stray female characters in the Marvel Universe that aren't in books. Huh. It's like Misty Knight. And like Danny Moonstar and Valkyrie and some other women.
That sounds right. Sounds like Heralds a little bit.
Right, yeah.
What the most popular miniseries Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great book, though.
And next up in the news, we got somebody sold a copy of Walking Dead number one today.
Yes.
For what? $10,000.
What?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's crazy. I've never seen it go for more than like, I don't know, like 1500 or something. But this was the only CGC 9.9 copy. I wonder if there's a 10 out there.
I don't think that happens. I don't think there are 10s.
It doesn't exist.
Because if one thing was a 10, then it's like...
10 is like the Aristotelian ideal or something.
The Platonic ideal?
They lose point one in the printing process, I think, is what happens.
When air
as soon
comes,
as they're printed, they lose one.
Yeah.
When ink goes onto the paper.
And then some of the more kind of shocking news, Hellblazer has been canceled.
Boo.
And there's a new Constantine book that takes place in the DC Universe.
That's not what anybody wants.
Because that's like the Vertigo book that was going to get hit 300 really soon.
Really soon, yeah.
Well, I think it'll go to 300 and
then they'll cancel it.
But
that's my point. Yeah. It's just like, why?
Who didn't see this coming?
Well, I mean, Hellblazer, it is sort of an institution at Vertigo. But I don't know. It'll probably sell better at first when it's a DC book. And then I think in the long run, it'll probably... be either canceled or something. I think that DC Universe version of Constantine is not what people really want
from him. Yeah.
He's great. I mean, I like Justice League Dark a lot, but he's not that kind of foul-mouthed, like, I don't know.
Really dark.
Yeah.
Like, mangled human.
He's more
person.
Like...
Not that DC should be promoting smoking, but does he even smoke in the DC Universe book? Oh, he does.
But they're candy cigarettes.
they're e-cigarettes.
It's e-cigarettes. He smokes Enjoys.
He charges them up on his Xbox. all right. Then that's it. That's all for news. That's a pretty sad ending to the news.
Right? Yeah, it's interesting.
So
it's like,
Vertigo going away?
That's what I was thinking. Right. Yeah, they're kind of
wrapping
Fables up a lot of
coming
stuff.
Out.
Yep, there's Fables, but I mean that's the kind of book where, like, if they just wanted to keep Fables going, they could easily jump it over to
graphic novels or
just make it a DC book. You know, like Lot 13 just came out, which you would think would be a Vertigo book,
but it's not for
reason. What has started up recently? I mean, Saucer Country,
Country, which is not doing well, and I don't think is
Dominique Laveau,
his long for this world,
which has already been canceled.
Sweet Tooth is ending.
Yep.
God, what else do they have?
There was the other one. They started with Saucer Country.
Fables and Fairest.
Fairest is doing okay.
Yeah, Fables, Fairest, Cinderella, Jack of Fables. So we'll see. Oh, Unwritten is still coming out, but I imagine that's
wrapping up.
Yeah, I bet that's going to wrap up soon, too. So, yeah, maybe bye-bye Vertigo in the near future.
Well, hopefully they'll get some.
Or they're just going to be putting out, like, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo hardcovers.
Right.
Well, that's the thing about Vertigo is it's this great, like, ambitious thing, but it's not creator-owned. So I think that, you know, it's like they own a percentage of it or, you know, there's like a...
Is it not creator-owned? Because I know the Scene of the Crime hardcover, which was originally a Vertigo thing, just came out under Image.
Right, and they said in the front, it took us a long time to get the rights to this.
Oh, really?
So I think it's like, you know, you get like 90% of it and 10% is owned by Vertigo so they can market. You know, it's like some deal like that. And I think with the rise of Image and stuff, Vertigo may not be attracting the talent that it used to.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunate. I mean, it's nice to have that like big company backing. And Vertigo, you know, they were the guys.
Right.
They did all the stuff when it was, I think Karen Berger was running it. I don't know if she's still the editor over there.
That's a good question.
you know, they Preacher and Sandman, all that crazy stuff.
Are you getting a new Garth Ennis series now that Boys is done?
It's true.
I don't
think he's going to be going back there.
Yeah, after his fallout with Wildstorm, which was under DC management at that time, I don't see Garth Ennis doing another series
before
with
Preacher.
DC.
Yeah,
before Preacher. Somebody told me that somebody was approached for another
Before Invisibles, wasn't it?
Before Invisibles, they asked Grant Morrison to do it.
What?
And he was like, what? For one thing, nobody wants to read that. Yeah. I don't feel like.
I mean, nobody even read Invisibles.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely has a following now, I guess.
Yeah.
But
it definitely didn't sell well.
But, and also probably the least of any of the big ongoing titles from that time period as well.
It got canceled twice.
I could do Before Why the Last Man.
They did three volumes. Before Why the Last Man.
Before Why the Last Man. Just about York being like a magician at kids' parties.
Yeah, hanging out with his monkey.
I would totally love that.
Oh, that would be amazing.
You mean Before Why the Last Man, ampersand?
That would be great. About ampersand, like, living in the jungle before he was captured.
Or before Why the Last Man, Amazons, which is just about, like, a group of girls that meets at, like, a coffee house.
But, you know, like Vaughn could do it. It's just, like, this over-sensing, like, feeling of dread through the entire series. You're like, oh, this is so lighthearted. Why do I feel so creeped out? What's about to happen?
And then, like, in the last issue, just, like, a guy, like, coughs.
Yeah, oh, that'd be amazing.
And they're like, what?
Next up is, like, Before Exterminators.
I wish.
Series that didn't last very long.
I would read Before Exterminators. I'd like to read After Exterminators, where there's just more issues of Exterminators.
Yeah. Yep. During Exterminators.
That was a good book, I feel like. It was, like, crazy Ghostbusters with giant roaches.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Grosser. You read it.
All of us.
I like that we're like sort of giving a memorial for Vertigo as if they're not around anymore. But they do still exist at the moment.
Rest in peace, Vertigo.
see you later. See you later. Bye. All right. Well, so that's it for the news. Let's do some viewer mail.
This just in. Vertigo has been canceled.
Vertigo revitalized by Before the Dreaming.
No, Vertigo DC Universe, New 52.
There you go.
That's the new
Vertigo, the new 52.
The new three.
The new three.
All right, let's do some humor.
All right.
All right, so this week we've got one question. Well, we got two questions from one person.
Oh.
And that person's name? Peevo.
Oh.
Hey, Peevo, how's it going?
Boo. I mean, hey.
I mean, hip hop hooray. Here's Peebo's first question, very relevant to the news we just did. With the sad news that Hellblazer is ending at Vertigo, what was your favorite run in the series?
Oh,
wow.
Timely.
That is well timed.
I probably should have told you guys about this question beforehand.
Nah, then we had off the cuff.
No, I got it because somebody asked me that today.
Did they?
Yeah, somebody at the store asked me that.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
And
I was like, I haven't read any Hellblazer. No, I was like,
read Hellblazer?
I told them I haven't read a lot of it, but I read Garth Ennis's stuff and that was good. Yep. I didn't read any of the newer Peter Milligan stuff. I heard that was good.
Yeah, I actually really liked some of the more recent Peter Milligan stuff. But I mean, I know you just said it, but I like the Garth Ennis stuff too.
I like Brian Azzarello's run actually. Although everyone complained because he was the first American to write a British character for Hellblazer, but
it's racist.
It was kind of like his tour of America and like all the weird horrific things that America has problems with. And I thought that was pretty cool. So
I don't know if it counts, but I loved the Hellblazer issues of Shade the Change Command.
Yeah.
Where John Constantine was in Shade the Changing Man.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And also the Hellblazer documentary with Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, that one's great. Is where he plays the cabbie?
Yeah, where he plays the cabbie.
Plays Skinny Chaz.
Later made the official version of Chaz.
Yeah, I was talking with people today about that today, how they changed him like between the previews and the regular issue from fat to skinny.
Fat Chaz.
And how they've changed all. There's no fat characters in the DC universe
anymore. They made Amanda Waller skinny as well.
God. She's been working out, though.
Yeah. The biggest losers are DC. And question two, which Alan Moore book would you recommend someone read first who has never read superhero comics and hasn't seen any of the movie adaptations?
Neonomicon.
Well, actually,
that's hard to say no to.
You didn't let me finish. I think that's the right answer. It says, and has the most fish rape.
Oh, that would be Neonomicon.
So there you go. The correct answer was Neonomicon.
Fish rape, not invisible rape.
So, Nick, what's your real answer?
My real answer? League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, actually.
Yeah.
That's probably the most... easily accessible because you know all the characters already. And so, and it's already awesome when they start showing up. If you know them all, you're like, oh, man. Oh, sweet. Oh, wow. That's crazy. Depends on a little bit on their tolerance for, like, really gross
for what's what. Yeah, sure, sure. I mean, because, like, you know, From Hell would be a good answer, but it depends on who it is, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like the Killing Joke is really accessible.
Oh, yeah.
I know Alan Moore doesn't like the Killing Joke.
Yeah, whatever.
That makes me like it more.
At the time. Right. That's true.
But I also, I think Top Ten's a great book, and I would recommend that book to anybody.
So good.
Yeah, and Tom Strong.
Yeah.
Those are pretty easy to get into.
I might do V for Vendetta just because it's like not
a... said non-superhero, right?
No, just somebody who has never read superhero comics.
It's a vigilante, man.
Which basically makes him say, like, it's like he's saying...
Don't. Except for Watchmen.
Would you say Watchmen? Because that's kind of a book for people who have read superhero books to a certain extent, I think.
Yeah. That's why I think V for Vendetta is good. It's like, it's not as obtuse as Watchmen in a lot of ways. It's got like a lot of cleverness in it, but a pretty direct storyline with a twist ending as opposed to a very complicated storyline.
It's certainly not as dense as Watchmen.
Actually, I have a better answer.
Is it better?
Yeah.
Oh, better than your previous answer or better than everybody's
answer? Better than everybody's
answer. Okay, great.
The DC Universe Stories of Alan Moore trade? That's a pretty good one. Because it's got, like, so much variety, and they're all good.
They're all DC
Universe. Got, like, the best Superman story ever in
it. It's true.
That's true.
I mean,
really good.
If somebody had never read superhero comics, I feel like that stuff would come off as hokey.
I think so.
Well, like, if you haven't ever read
good point.
Well, what is this world that Pivo is talking about where somebody has never read a superhero comic ever in their entire life? And,
I think his point was that they hadn't seen the terrible adaptations of all of his movies.
It says they've never read superhero comics.
But after that, what does it say about movies?
And hasn't seen any of the movie adaptations.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, these are complicated.
I think The Extraordinary Gentleman is like the easiest for somebody who hasn't read anything. But
who's never read
ever?
Who's never read a book?
Pictures. I don't think we're battling. No. I think League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is a good answer.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. It's a pretty good answer.
Pretty good answer.
Yeah. So let's go with that. Everybody says League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Success.
Nick is right. Nick was wrong because he said his second answer was better. But actually, his first answer was the best answer.
Yeah, probably.
So you win. Let's see if I have some applause on here. Close enough.
Accurate.
All right. Well, thanks for the question, Pivo. If you guys have questions, you can send those questions to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, or you can leave a message on our podcast hotline.
Yeah.
That's 1-703-539-CAST.
What?
That's 1-703-539-CAST. And if you send us $100, you get a Big Planet Comics tote bag.
Yeah, boy.
Yep. And an HD radio. Okay. So... that's it for the questions. But send us questions. We like to answer the questions.
Yeah.
We like to the chit chat,
yell at each other. And we do it off the air, but it's more fun when we're doing a podcast. Yeah. All right. So you guys want to do some reviews?
Yes.
No. Yes.
Wait.
No. Yes. I mean, I meant yes.
All right. Well, ready? Let's on three, let's say whether we're going to do reviews or not. Ready? 1, 2, 3, no.
Eh.
Reviews.
All right. Let's do some reviews.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
I thought you guys were going to be like, on three? I thought you were going to do like a Lethal Weapon thing to me there for a second.
Well, when we all paused and nobody said anything, clearly we should have had that discussion.
Wait, the discussion about Lethal Weapon?
Yeah.
It's a good movie. I'm excited
it really wasn't.
No. The first Lethal Weapon?
Oh, the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about Lethal Weapon 8.
Is that a thing?
It will be.
There are four Lethal Weapon movies, right?
Four. Jet Li was in the fourth one, right?
The guy that wrote the first one is going to be writing and directing the new Iron Man movie.
I thought you were going to say writing and directing Star Wars.
I don't know what. No. Who is going to be writing and directing? Well, no. Michael Arndt is going to be writing Star Wars.
Michael Arndt, what?
Surely he's Arndt.
He wrote Toy Story 3 and Little Miss Sunshine. So that's something.
Oh. Those are both movies I think of when I think of Star Wars.
I cried during both of those.
Did you?
Well,
Fett got eaten.
Nick cries.
Or when Han Solo got frozen in carbonite.
Nick cries every time he hears "You Can't Touch This" by MC.
Most people do, though.
It's true. All right, so up first this week. This was a big Marvel Now week. A bunch of new titles launched. I would say 3 hard launches, 1 soft launch.
Interesting.
Or 4 hard launches. So many hard launches. But up first, we've got All New X-Men, number 1. This is by Brian Michael Bendis and with art by Stuart Immonen. Bendis is, I mean, you guys all know who Bendis is, but he's been writing the Avengers books forever, and this is kind of his, he's moving over to the X-Men books, and this is the first one to come out. And Stuart Immonen drew Next Wave, drew a run on Ultimate Spider-Man. He's drawn a lot of stuff. He's a good artist.
He drew the best.
Very good.
Yeah.
Best stuff.
And All New Shock X-Men Rockets is a weird book where the X-Men from the past come to the present.
Or do they?
Spoiler.
Well, it seems like they do.
So I guess this book picks up right after AVX Consequences, which actually ended up being pretty consequential. Ironically, I don't think, like, it seemed like one of those things where, like, you didn't really have
like
to read
fill
it.
In between,
you're like, hey, here's an epilogue to AVX that I don't have to read.
Well, and I only read the first issue of that, and that was still the sense I got from that book, but I guess it gets, like, more.
Yeah. I mean, the last.
Important.
Spoiler alert, but the last two issues of that are Magneto and Magic and somebody breaking Cyclops out of jail.
Somebody.
Oh, that explains the beginning of this comic.
Yeah.
Yep. I was a little thrown off.
Jared didn't read it either. He's like, nope. Why is Cyclops not in jail?
That guy, like, killed a bunch of people.
Yeah. It's
spoiler
pretty,
alert, seems, Cyclops killed a bunch of people.
It seems pretty important, because if you read Uncanny Avengers and then you read this, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, I would say that is also another example of how Marvel now is not exactly the best, like, just, like, jump in and read a story thing.
I feel like maybe you could read this kind of without knowing too much about it, because they explain everything.
You definitely wouldn't be like, why isn't Cyclops in jail? Because you wouldn't know he was supposed to be in jail.
Right. Because they explain everything pretty well. Because, I mean, it starts off with Beast being like, oh, I've transformed into this beast. I used to be a normal human being in the past, you know, like, and then it's like Cyclops shows up and he's like, I'm Cyclops. I'm doing this.
It's his dialogue.
He's like, well, and he says, my mutant name is Cyclops.
Oh, terrible.
And then he says like, you know, I'm trying to change the world for mutants. Like, well, he explains everything, basically.
That's actually kind of clever that it says his mutant name. Like, that's, yeah, he's been kind of re-christened.
Yeah. He's like,
he's re-christened.
My slave name is Scott Summers or something like that. I don't know.
We're going to cut that part out where you just said that.
Oh my God.
It's supposed to be like.
Okay, so.
Moving on.
So what happens in this comic?
He just told you.
I just told you. Anyway.
Well,
he told
us part of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, Cyclops is helping some new mutants find their way, and at the same time, the other X-Men are like, Cyclops is crazy. He's going to getting us all killed. And so Beast is like, I'm going to go into the past and bring the X-Men from the past into the future. Not sure why.
Sure, why not?
He just kind of gets the idea of like, he's like, if Cyclops could see himself now in the past or something like that.
I think it was just that, you know, like, based on Civil War and all that awesome stuff, we love seeing heroes fight each other, but what would be even more epic would be seeing the same hero fight themselves.
Yeah. But yeah, pretty interesting. I'm more interested to see the second issue, because I want to see these X-Men come into the future and be like, what the?
This was certainly a lot of setup.
A lot of setting it up.
I feel like this was almost exactly like the first issue of Spider-Man.
A little bit
like they meet at the end, and then they're like, okay, now let's do stuff.
But the advantage to this is that it's coming out every 2 weeks for a little while, so it'll be pretty fast paced.
Yeah,
like, you know, you won't have to wait too long.
Yeah, and I thought it was I did think it was a good first issue. It's interesting to see those characters, which I wonder, it's weird because, you know, that comic took place in the 60s, but I'm assuming now these guys are like in the 90s, the early 2000s. So
the past.
Yeah, it's definitely not that like same world of, you know, the civil rights movement and stuff.
Good point.
That,
yeah. All
that
the Vietnam War,
the original X-Men were so like analogous to. But I think it should be interesting just seeing. I don't know, because it's not going to... When I first thought of it, I was like, oh, these old-timey guys, you know? Well, but they're not going to really be that old-timey.
One of the funny things is, like, somebody was talking to me today about how, like, the only person who's getting off, like, you know, is Iceman's the only one that's, like, still okay. Like, Jean Grey is dead. Angel, Angel is, like, half-dead, resurrected. Beast is like a monster now, and he's dying.
And he's dying, yeah.
And Cyclops is like, you know,
insane psychopath,
like Magneto,
murder.
Basically.
Yeah.
Huh. And Iceman's like nice. He's working at a school. He's got like better control of his powers.
Well, there
that's
was an
called character.
There was an evil version of him, though.
Yeah, but he was from a different dimension.
And he got put in a furnace.
That's true.
That's what you do. So overall, though, I thought this was a pretty good
book. No, it was good. Yeah. It was solid. I like the new direction for Cyclops. I like that he's kind of... He's like a villain, but he's like the best kind of villain, where it's like...
He's got like a vision.
You can kind of sympathize with him.
Yeah.
Well, he's just Magneto.
Yeah.
Basically, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's sort of usurped Magneto.
A little bit. He's like Magneto, except instead of... He's more like, I don't even know how to, he's not like Magneto, because Magneto is like, he wants the mutants to be superior or whatever, but Cyclops just wants to make them coexist, which is a little different, but.
Yeah, but, yeah, but besides Cyclops, it was a good book. I mean, it was interesting.
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty cool.
Introduction to some new mutants, which are both pretty interesting characters so far.
Yeah, this is one where we might have to talk about later issues just because there's...
Right, just to see what actually develops out.
Cool. So, all new X-Men.
Yeah.
All right. So, after that, we've got another Marvel Now book, kind of.
Marvel Now.
I mean, this is just Avengers Assemble number 9, but it's got a new creative team, a completely different feel, I feel like. But so this is Kelly Sue DeConnick is writing this now, who's been writing Captain Marvel, who's written quite a few other things in the past, with art by Stefano Caselli, who I mostly know, I think, from Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah. The Avengers Initiative when that was coming out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Secret
some
Wars.
Of, and also some of Avengers Academy, I think?
No.
Maybe? No?
No.
Never mind.
Avengers Initiative is basically the
I'm going to delete
Academy.
That. I'm going to delete the racist stuff that Nick said before, and I'm going to delete that part where I said that.
It wasn't racist.
So, this was awesome. I was not a big fan of Avengers Assemble before this issue. I mean, I thought it was okay. The Thanos stuff was all right. I thought the beginning storyline with the Zodiac was, like, a little bit boring.
A little light.
And we all know I'm not a fan of Mark Bagley. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we talk about Fantastic Four. But, which was actually a kind of good art for Mark Bagley.
Sweet Jesus, this book was hilarious, man.
Yeah, so that's the main thing about this book. So the storyline of this issue is just that Bruce Banner and Tony Stark are kind of competing with each
very
other.
Different,
yeah,
ideas.
but they from very different sides of things. So they're both kind of innovators in science and technology and stuff, but they're approaching things from completely different ways.
Right.
And I think it seems like Tony Stark thinks that Bruce Banner is a little bit of a downer.
Right.
What did he call him? Dour?
He called him dour, yeah. And then he needs a little bit of a kick in the butt to just like get more positive.
Right.
And so basically they find out about this like H.P. Lovecrafty Antarctica base or whatever.
Right.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, that where there's supposed to be aliens frozen under this lake. And so so Tony Stark basically bets $100,000 that his team can find out what's happening before Bruce Banner's team. And then the rest of the book is mostly them putting together teams.
Yeah.
And it's really funny, just the interactions between all the characters. Like, I think probably the best scene is when Spider-Woman proves she's useful by causing Hulk to make her a sandwich by using her pheromones.
Yeah.
So hilarious.
It's really funny.
It's really funny.
Hulk is really bad at making sandwiches.
The picture of Hulk holding a sandwich is one of the
after destroying the
kitchen. A sandwich which clearly has meat on it, but also has peanut butter on it.
And
I think that kind of that tone holds up throughout the book. It's like while they're all going out to Antarctica and like fighting these crazy monster things, they're like Captain Marvel and Wolverine are back at the base just like watching them on TV basically.
Right. Yeah,
and, like,
yeah,
making
popcorn.
Fun of them and eating popcorn.
Yeah.
And, it was just a good book. It was fun. It kind of reminded me of like the older Bendis New Avengers stuff, like when New Avengers used to be a little more fun.
Yeah.
Like the dialogue's just really snappy and really funny.
Yeah.
So it just all the characters just really played well off each
and
other.
And this is the most accessible of the Marvel Now books.
I think so. You can just jump in. You don't need to know anything. You just read this and it's a fun book.
Yeah.
And I think Caselli's art, which has always been good, is like a little bit softer now.
Yeah.
But in a good way. Like he doesn't use those kind of heavy lines that he used to use all the time. And everything just looks a little more dynamic than it used to. And
His facial expressions are great.
Really,
they remind me a lot of what's his face, the Kevin Maguire.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can definitely
like
see that.
He's definitely got that that facial expression thing down.
Yeah, that sandwich thing.
I'm cracking up just looking at it again.
I will say Miss Marvel's hair is a little out of control in this. I don't know what she's rocking, some kind of mullet or something. It doesn't look good. But,
that's what she has in the comic. She's got like a weird mohawk.
But she like brushes it back. And this, she seriously looks like Longshot.
Oh, you're right.
But overall, this was a really fun comic. And actually, I don't know, just like.
Good story and action too.
Just good stuff all around. It's Marvel's doing a good job this week,
knocking it out the park.
Indeed. All right, so enough superhero books for 5 seconds. Up next, we've got City in the Desert Volume 1, The Monster Problem by Mauro Rogers.
So this one, Nick and I had, Nick had picked up on earlier last year, or God, this thing's been coming out forever. We're very excited about it because we saw some of Mauro's art online, and she's obviously very, very talented. So this is another world where a slightly different creative mythology than ours, where the gods have created monsters as kind of like a balance and a challenge to humanity, which of course have then overrun the world. So the main characters are a duo of monster hunters who go out and just hunt down monsters using all kinds of ridiculous technology. I'd say like roughly medieval setting. Perhaps slightly magic-y.
They've got kind of guns.
Yeah,
and
slightly
some
science-y.
Weird science. Yeah.
Well, and it seems a little Middle Eastern potentially as well. Yeah.
So weird sci-fi / fantasy setting. And so the two main are this older guy and this younger girl who's kind of like a monkey and might be an animal or a monster.
She's definitely some kind of monster. Yeah.
And then it's I don't know, like. The main thing is there's a very complicated plot about what society is like dealing with these monsters and if they have a bigger scheme for it. But a lot of it's just the interaction between the two of them and like trying to make their way through the development of
a lot of religious themes in it. They're talking about their God created all these monsters to balance out humanity. And then there's this super religious group that's like,
who thinks that's a completely not interpretative of what really happens and that they should entirely.
And they want to get rid of monsters, and I don't even know how much to say about it because they.
Well, I mean, you can say the basic of basically there's a guy that shows up that says he has a way to make all the monsters die.
Yeah.
And then the main character whose name I completely forget. I feel like we always forget main characters in this podcast.
What's his name?
But he thinks that this guy is shady and that he, you know, maybe has some sort of ulterior motive. And then everybody else thinks that did you find the main character's name?
Iroh.
And then everybody else thinks that Iroh obviously is just saying that because he makes his living hunting monsters.
Right.
And then it turns from just kind of like gallivanting around killing monsters book into a let's get to the bottom of this kind of mystery
intrigue like deviousness
I thought that the balance of those two things of like the beginning of the story and then kind of when it turns and there's sort of more of an antagonist and like something to do, I thought it worked out really well, and I really enjoyed this. I know you guys like the art a lot. I felt it was like a little rushed, like a little lazy at times.
Sometimes it's like really loose, so sometimes it looks a little off.
Yeah, and I don't mind the looseness, but like you look at the cover of the book, which is also very loose and dynamic, but is also very well rendered. Right. And then you look at some of the stuff on the inside, and it just is a little lazy from
depending
time to
on
time.
Which page it is.
There's definitely like you could see that he would like was enjoying drawing some more pages more than others because he's like, is it she?
I think so.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is she. And she's like, you know, they're fighting monsters, and those scenes are all super, super well drawn.
Yeah, right. So a monster will show up, and it's like perfectly rendered. But then some of it looks. Like it kind of reminds me of animation storyboards or just thumbnails as opposed to finished panels. But
the coloring makes it work a little bit more than it could, you know, if it wasn't colored right.
Yeah, it's colored in a very simple way, but a way that gives it depth. And but I mean, it's still a great book. And some of the, you know, I mean, the art's not bad by any stretch. It's just I just felt like a little loose at times.
Yeah, but I really like the relationship between the two main characters. And like she kind of likes him, but he kind of feels like she's just not like human. He doesn't know what she is, and she's too young.
It's like a weird mix of like mentor and like human whatever relationship.
And I thought the creatures were interesting. The creature they ride is really strange.
Oh, yeah, that kind of robotic monster.
Do you mean because
thing.
His head pops off?
Yeah. And there's like these crazy machines that show up, and I I don't know. It was fun. It was definitely fun throughout.
Building. Yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting universe, and I'm interested to read more.
Yeah, I think she said she's going to do three of these total. So that was kind of my one complaint. Is, I mean, it's a good complaint, but it like ends on this kind of real cliffhanger thing of like, what next? So
it ends on a really depressing note, actually.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, everybody is sad at the end of this book.
Yep.
Nobody is happy.
What the preview for the next one?
Except us. We were happy because it was a good book.
Yep.
All right, so we got more Marvel stuff now. We got Fantastic Four, a numero uno.
Yeah.
So this is the first appearance of a new team called the Fantastic Four. And
what do they do?
One of them stretches, and then the other one, you can't see her. No, this is written by Matt Fraction, who's taking over the Fantastic Four line from Jonathan Hickman.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, seemingly leaving a lot of his characters and stuff that he's set up intact, which is great.
Yeah, still got Dragon Man and
and like the Moloid kids and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm happy all that's still there. And this is art by Mark Bagley, who you know, I'm not the biggest fan of, but I do I do feel like his art in this is a little bit better than we've seen from him in the past, maybe.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me a little more of Alan Davis.
Yeah, which, it definitely looks Alan Davis-y.
And which is great for Fantastic Four. But yeah, I don't know. Nick, what did you think about this?
I thought it was pretty awesome. I really like the fact that it didn't drop all the previous stuff. And it sets up a story that could lead to so many awesome possibilities.
Yeah, so I don't want to say too much about what Reed Richards is seemingly about to do,
like
I think we can talk about why, but basically this issue seems to be leading towards a story that mirrors the beginning of Fantastic Four, which I think is a pretty cool way to launch a new series.
They're trying to kind of open up the idea of like a very cosmic adventuring group of people, which is what the FF used to do a lot of, and kind of will swing through that depending on the writer from time to time before they settle back down to a very boring normal superhero team.
They're going on an adventure that's going to last a year. And the first page of the issue is 1 year from now, and something really crazy is happening on it.
Can we just can we cut that out like a little bit though? Just like
what's that?
The time jumps at the beginning of comic books. It seems to be in every single comic that comes out now. It's like 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes from now, and I'm like, okay, cool. Like you could have just told me all this in order, and it probably would have been just as exciting.
Well, there's this cool new movie. I don't know if you've seen it yet, called Pulp Fiction, where they jump around in time a lot.
Oh, is that like Looper?
Yeah, it's exactly like Looper. Oh, another thing I was going to say about this is this is a lot more, it seems like this and FF are going to be a lot more closely tied together than I initially thought. Because the end of this is like, to be continued in 2 weeks in FF number one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
That is weird.
I don't think that's necessarily a good idea, but we'll see when FF comes out.
Well, and also, I mean, Johnny Storm goes on a date with She-Thing in this, so. That's how it starts off.
Oh, that is true. Yeah. Yeah. No, but I actually thought this was a really good issue. I like that they're kind of establishing the relationships between everybody in the family and like you were saying, like the kids and it's Dragon Man and all that stuff. Yeah, but I think Fraction handles it pretty well. Probably he benefits from having written X-Men for such a long time and dealing with so many characters. And yeah, I don't know. There's just a lot of different stuff set up in this.
Yeah, and you get a little bit of everything that you love. You get some Yancey Street action.
That's true.
You get some Herbie action in there.
Yeah, so I guess one thing we should say is the main kind of crux of this story is that it seems like the unstable molecules that give the Fantastic Four their powers are deteriorating.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so Reed Richards is trying to figure out how to fix that. And he seems to be being a little devious about it, which actually rings pretty true to Reed Richards' character to me.
Especially the Hickman interpretation.
Well, he always tries to hide stuff from his family just so he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's back in the Kirby days.
That's true.
Yeah. Some of that Kirby stuff is rough.
Yeah.
He's like, leave me alone, go make me a sandwich. Like, that's a line from one of the comics.
Right. Wow.
It's pretty nuts. But yeah, no, I like this issue. I think it seems like we all did.
It's good. Yep. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Great Pacific, which is a new Image series, which is always a cause for excitement
these days.
Yeah. So this is by Joe Harris, who wrote
stuff. Ghost Project?
Oh, yeah, Ghost Project. That's what I was trying to think of.
There you go.
I was getting him mixed up with Joe Flood. But he wrote Ghost Project. And this is art by Martin Morazzo, who I do not know, but
is awesome.
Is a very good artist. Yeah. Can somebody try to explain what Great Pacific is about? Because there's a lot of stuff going on in this comic.
Joe Harris was nice enough to also send us previews of the next two issues. So I think all of us have read at least the first three.
I only read the first one.
Okay, that'll be interesting because, like, I read them all together, and like,
yeah, me too.
Crazy stuff happens in 2 and 3 that like I assumed like was at least hinted at in this one, and it's only vaguely hinted at. So
okay, well, we should probably only talk about what's in 1.
No, I'm just curious about like what I, you know, is coming. But
well, you kind of see what's coming in the very
it's got the opening
few pages. But basically, this rich kid.
Young Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, young Bruce
Wayne.
With
no Batman to focus him.
Yeah. Chaz Worthington III.
Yes.
Yeah. He owns like an oil company, and he's trying to kind of find innovative solutions to clean up oil spills and stuff to make them more money.
Not seemingly because he cares about oil spills, but just he mostly wants to make more money, and he seems like a bit of a glory hound from what
right.
I can tell.
Yeah, yeah. And there's, you know, there's this thing that's been kind of on the news and the internet and stuff. There's this giant, like, mass of plastic and bags and bottles.
Basically,
and
all
stuff.
The garbage that's in the ocean is congealing into a gigantic island in the
yeah.
Pacific.
And in this, I don't know if, I'm pretty, yeah, it's not like as crazy as it is in this, but like, you know, the island in here is like the size of Texas.
Yeah, it's called the Great Pacific Gyre. It just sits, it's the size of Texas, and it just sits in the middle of the Pacific.
Yeah, and so this guy is about to set up some kind of colony or expedition into the area.
But a lot of stuff happens
before
on
that.
The way there. Yeah, yeah. So basically,
and that's kind of the fun part of it, I mean.
So basically, he's trying to, it seems like he's tried a lot of different things, but kind yeah. of mostly he's just a slacker. Like
yeah.
they said he raced in the Grand Prix. He likes to do like skydiving and stuff.
Yeah,
and
dating supermodels, traveling all over the world, hunting with the Maasai, just like whatever ridiculous thing you can do when you're rich and bored.
Right. And so, but as sort of a side project, he's working on this, this thing that cleans up oil very fast, and everybody kind of thinks he's a joke. So he thinks that with the pressure of all these other people from this company around him, he can't really do anything. So he fakes his own death.
Yep.
And that kind of is what really gets the story going. So he fakes his own death. He embezzles a bunch of money. And then
from
he
himself.
Hits the road with his like loyal manservant slash best friend.
Yeah.
Who like is his driver, basically.
And you get a little hint at what's to come in the very first pages where he's like on this giant mound of garbage, and there's like a mutated birds and
yep.
stuff.
Yeah.
And I've read the next two, and I don't want to give anything away, but there's a lot more crazy stuff on that island once it starts popping. It's pretty interesting.
And the story's well told. Chaz is kind of an unlikable character, but in the way that I think he's really meant to be.
Yeah.
And his friend's kind of a goof. It almost has like a I want to say like a Ferris Bueller's Day Off kind of feel to it or something like
yeah.
that. The story is great. It's well told. It's really well paced. And the art is just incredible.
So good.
I don't even know what I would compare this guy's art
to. It's kind of Frank Quitely-ish.
Yeah.
A little bit in the faces.
Yeah. And then maybe like a little bit of like, it reminds me a little bit of Riley Rossmo in some ways
yeah.
too.
A little bit.
And then some of the stuff's really hyper detailed in a way that almost reminds me of like Nate Simpson.
Yeah,
because it's like a really clean way.
Yeah, the backgrounds are like super detailed.
Yeah, and the color palette's really great too. We should say that the guy actually did all of his own colors as well.
Oh, that explains it.
That's
cool.
He does a really good job. Yeah, but this is a really cool first issue. I mean, if you've been keeping up with stuff like The Massive or you know just like all the other good stuff that's coming out right
yeah,
now,
this is definitely. One of the next great new things.
Yep, this is definitely one to add to the list.
Exciting.
All right, up next we've got a book that's probably not going to be for everyone, but it was one of my favorite things this week. I do want to say Prison Pit also came out this week. Prison Pit 4.
Yes.
Shout out to Prison Pit 4.
Shout out to Prison Pit. Comic I can't recommend to anybody.
Yeah, we can't really review Prison Pit on this show.
But we all love it.
But just know...
it's available, finally.
Yeah, it's like the most metal Dragon Ball Z of all time. But, all right, so up next we've got Nurse by Katie Skelly. This has come out in mini comics. I've been collecting it at SPX over the last couple of years, yeah. And it's very cool. It's a little... let's see, what is Nurse about?
In the future, there is a nursing corps that goes between the planets... helping people.
Colonies.
Yeah, because Earth is colonizing other planets because it's overpopulated. So they send these groups of nurses out to the planets.
Like Venus and Mars.
To help people acclimate to the new climates and sort of talk them through, you know, what they need to do and stuff like that.
But there's also rock bands and, like, you know, cat fights and, you know, backstabbing nurses and
aliens.
There are those things. Yeah, yep. Yeah. So,
a lot of drama.
yeah, there's definitely drama between. So the main nurse is this girl named Gemma, and you follow her through the whole story, and she kind of goes from dealing with like mean girls in the first one on Venus to then like getting sent to work on Mars and being hijacked by pirates that are very clearly influenced by like Star Blazers, like Battleship Yamamoto stuff. And then it just goes crazy from there. She at one point becomes a pirate herself, and then there's some like, besides the sci-fi stuff we're talking about, there's some other like even more sci-fi stuff about clones and stuff, and you know, they're
hallucinogenic butterflies.
There's all kinds of crazy stuff. I love this book.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
The art's the art is a big draw for this of this. For me, the art of this book is a huge draw.
Yeah,
I'd say Katie Skelly is really influenced by stuff like Junko Mizuno.
Yeah,
Who?
But even more clean.
Yeah, definitely more clean. Yeah, it's sort of Junko Mizuno by way of
Cross or somebody
of like more modern indie comic stuff, but then also a lot of, I would say, heavy like shoujo manga influence.
Yeah, for sure.
Like especially the older stuff from the 70s. Like, have you ever seen like Aim for the Ace or anything like that?
Yeah.
And it's just like it is one of those comics that you kind of just have to read and then you know whether it's for you or not.
Right.
Right.
But it was definitely for me.
Yeah.
It's fun and it's kind of like cute and
inventive, and
it's just good.
Good characters.
Yeah, I'd say
good twists.
Seems like Barbarella is probably a big influence on this as well, and that kind of period of stuff, and more specifically the Barbarella comic, actually.
Yeah.
It's a cool book, and if any of those things sound interesting to you, you should probably just check it out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. All right. So a couple more things. We got Thor, God of Thunder, number one. This is written by Jason Aaron, who wrote Scalped and Wolverine and the X-Men and
some other amazing books.
The Other Side, which is one of the most underrated graphic novels of all time. It's
can't
great.
Be too underrated if it got him a job in comics.
That's true. Right. And art in this is by Esad Ribic, who's done, well, he did some Uncanny X-Force stuff. Did he also do another Thor? He did a couple other Thor things, sort of, right?
Yeah.
Did he do the stuff with Garth Ennis? Was that him?
No.
No, that was, the other guy.
Rudy Valentino.
Yeah.
But Jim anyway, he has done, it was Jim Valentino. Esad Ribic's great. He has a very, like, painterly style.
He's kind of like a Frazetta type guy. This is probably the most epic Thor book I've ever read. And I've read a lot of epic Thor books.
It's true.
So the basic setup of this is that there's a kind of a killer of gods on the loose throughout space and time. And so we start off with young Thor in the Norse days, which is kind of gives you an interesting look at how young Thor was perceived and how he acted based on those perceptions when he's young. He's kind of like brash and everybody like worships him. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty cool. He's like, I'm going to come save you guys so I can just like have sex with all your women and drink all your booze or whatever.
Yeah, of course, this comic starts. It's like 1500 years ago.
Yeah.
And then like, it goes, hey, time jumps.
Then it cuts to present day and you see a little kind of something interesting where like they've shown stuff like this in Thor before, but how there are like other pantheons of gods throughout the universe. And he goes to like a planet where they don't have any gods, and then he finds out that those gods are very much dead.
Yep.
And so then it cuts to future Thor, who's the most awesome Thor.
Yeah, and yes, that's all we should say about that part, because it's...
Yeah, so it's, basically you've got in the past, the present, and the far, far future, which is just... It basically takes the whole Thor set of characters and stuff and just shows you, like, how big the story is going to be and how much they've done with it, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, this approach to a Thor comic is kind of not like anything I feel like I've ever read before.
Yeah,
for Thor.
It really, like, hits home the fact that he's kind of like an immortal god, or, like, ages very slowly.
Yeah, like, I feel like Jason Aaron, I mean, like, Scalped is great. I love his Wolverine and the X-Men stuff, but it's very fun and light. And then I thought, his Wolverine stuff is okay. It's not the best, like, his Wolverine goes to hell and all that stuff. Yeah. It's good, though. Yeah. But this just, like, has, like a gravity to it that I think, like, his other superhero stuff doesn't have. Like, this feels like a great story already, and it's only been one issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ribic's art, like Nick was saying, is, like, you could compare it to Frazetta. Or also, I think it's very similar to, like, Opeña's recent work,
right?
And especially if you look at like some of his pencils that are coming up on Avengers, which look amazing. But that kind of Frazetta painted feel works really well with this.
There are some epic scenes that he does in here.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
And old Thor looks awesome. Yeah. And the creature that he's fighting is actually very menacing. And the whole thing's really well paced. And yeah. And the dialogue's great. It goes from funny to kind of like things get kind of dark at times as well. And
yeah.
It's a good book.
Yes.
This was awesome.
It was really awesome.
It's the most like Thor comic that I've read in a long time. Like he doesn't interact. Like it's not like about him and like Wolverine like
right.
doing stuff or
right.
like,
but you could see that it would be at some point and it would be like good.
Yeah,
yeah. True.
Yeah. This is the first Thor comic I've been interested in a long time.
Right.
I feel like besides Journey into Mystery, which wasn't really a Thor comic, yeah. it was a Loki comic. I mean that comic's great, but like I was not a big fan of the Straczynski Thor, which I know everybody loved.
Yeah.
And I feel like because it wasn't this, you know, it was like Thor in Oklahoma.
Right.
It's, which was cool, but I yeah. this That's is like this is like doing. Thor, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think all of us would say Thor God of Thunder is a high recommendation.
Yeah, highest.
Super high.
Yeah. All right, so we got one more book this week. This one's last.
This is the last thing.
This is the last one. Somebody else is going to need to talk about this. This is X-Men Legacy number one. This is written by Simon Spurrier, who wrote X-Club, and has written quite a few other things, with art by Tanang Kwat, who is that?
He drew stuff. He drew some Ghost Rider
okay.
when Jason Aaron was doing it, and he did some... I feel like he did some Frankencastle somewhere in there.
Sounds okay. All right. Well, the art in this definitely kept me going.
Yeah. All right. I'll try it on this one. So this one we were talking about, this is definitely not a Marvel. I don't know. For a Marvel now, this is kind of obtuse if you don't love the old X-Men. But they kind of try to get around it. So basically, at some point, this is... See, I don't even know all the background for this. Professor X...
I feel like you don't need to.
But see, that's the thing. It's kind of really heavy, and then they just move past it very quickly. Professor X had a son who's a powerful psychic.
Whose name is David Haller?
Sure. I knew the David part. See, I didn't even know his last name. But anyway, he went crazy or had problems or whatever it is. And
he's like a super powerful mutant who's got, like, multiple personality disorder.
It's a good time. So this is basically from kind of following his point of view, or just following him around. And you very quickly, not very quickly, the development over this issue is that he is trying to redeem himself and get his powers under control while at the same time trying to keep his personalities and his mind held together. And so he has basically created a psychic, like, world where all of his different bits and pieces of himself are represented by different people who are in a giant prison. And they've all got powers, and he is the, like, jailer trying to keep everything under control.
That's kind of his thing, is, like, he has these multiple personalities that are all different superpowered beings. And they're, like, that's what the Legion part is from. He has a Legion of personalities inside of his head. And his way of controlling all of them is just by making this jail in his brain to lock them all in.
Did this guy used to have a mohawk?
I think his hair just like spiked.
He did an Age of X.
Okay.
Oh, did it?
See, I get. I've been really into the X-Men books recently, but like my X-Men knowledge is like.
Yep, me too.
He's mostly had this hair for most of the time.
Which is like kind of like.
A troll doll.
Like Kid and Play.
Like the guy from Trigun.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he talks about his hair in this, which is
Vash the Stampede.
Yeah.
There you go.
But I don't know. I thought the idea of the jail in his head was really cool, and I really liked his mentor,
his kind of like martial arts master,
the monk guy. Yeah,
yeah. He's awesome.
And it was interesting seeing him doing all this stuff, and then he's like, it's funny because he's like, Professor X just took me here to help me, and he just disappeared.
Yep.
And then the thing that happens at the end is so crazy, and it's like. It's pretty intense, and I have no idea where it's going to go from here.
That's true.
But I'm kind of interested. I like it. I like the whole prison in his head thing, and that it's kind of a continuing story that's running parallel to what's going on and influencing what's going on. I thought it was
pretty
interesting.
They're literally like two stories. Like you can just look at it. I mean, they weave them together well, but it can't just be like, here's the drama inside his head, while here's what's going on outside, but they start influencing each other in very bad ways.
So all that happens, but did you, like... Did you guys feel that this was like I had a hard time following this story. There was something about the dialogue and like the way things were paced throughout it that was just like, it was like throwing me off, and I just like couldn't get into the story, like into the groove of the story.
Well, it took me about halfway through to figure out that that was all in his head and this was happening concurrently. That took me a while. Well, once that kind of clicked, I'm like, I get it.
You know what? I got interrupted like halfway through reading this, and that might be kind of what happened.
Yeah,
but,
no, I never had a problem. I thought it was pretty easy to follow.
I just thought the dialogue was like a little... I don't know something. Maybe I shouldn't be talking about this because I was maybe spacing out when I was reading this or something. But the art is great. I will say that
is good.
Yeah. And I mean, I thought the ending was pretty nuts, and I'm curious to see where it goes from here. There's kind of like stuff is about to happen.
I thought this was the most surprising thing I read this week, just because it's like
it's weird.
It's a bizarre book. It's like it's not like an X-Men book.
No, it's like a. It's not like a superhero book.
It feels like a heavy metal story.
It's like a Vertigo take on a superhero or something.
I feel like Simon Spurrier has actually written a lot of heavy metal stuff.
Has he? So.
Yeah.
Is he a British guy?
Yeah.
His name is Simon Spurrier. Yeah, so you guys liked it? I mean, I'm definitely going to keep reading it.
I like it. I like it. It's like the weird, out of nowhere book that I don't have any expectations of, and I have no idea anywhere that it could go after this.
Well, there you go. If that's not a recommendation, right. I don't know what is. Yeah. All right, so that's it for reviews this week. We had a bunch of Marvel books. I think we're going to have a bunch next week, too, though. I know, like, Indestructible Hulk comes out,
kids.
And some other stuff.
All right,
so. Hulk comes out next week?
That book looks like it has good reviews. But that is not it for this podcast. Stay tuned.
What?
We've got an interview with Ben Hatke.
Indeed.
That's about to play. And he wrote Zeta the Space Girl, and he came and signed for us over the
weekend. Yep.
And it was a lot of fun. He's a nice guy. So
came in with his very talented two of his daughters who were both doing comics the whole time, which was pretty amazing.
Nah, that's funny.
So here that is.
Okay, we're here with Ben Hatke. All right, look at that. You pronounced it right. So do you want to, like, introduce yourself and or Zeta? Like, give us the pitch.
Yeah, the pitch.
or however.
Convince you to buy a copy of the book. Or
just tell us what it is.
It's an all-ages graphic novel series. It's two of them, and it's going to end up being a trilogy. Zeta the Space Girl and Legends of Zeta the Space Girl. The first book tells the story of why this young girl is wandering through space trying to get home.
Right.
It tells how her friend gets transported to another world one day when they're walking home from school.
Like you do.
Yeah, like you know, tends to happen. And so then she has to go, she basically goes on a quest to rescue him. And in the end of that book, without giving too much away of the ending, she's still wandering through space trying to find a way to Earth. Legends of Zeta picks up shortly after, and she is dealing with the fallout, because in the first book, in the process of hunting down her friends, she ends up saving a planet from destruction. And now this, she's in the beginning of the second book, she's dealing with some of the fame that comes along with saving a planet.
Right.
And she tries to escape the crowds, ends up separated from her friends, and has to hunt them down. Because there's also a robot imposter that looks just like her,
and another
planet in peril, and so it's the second one's a much more windy adventure, but there's a lot of stuff in it too. So
that was actually one of my questions. Like, when Zeta ended up, like, at the end, it could have just stopped there. Of like, here's a cool ending, and this is going on. And the end of Legends of Zeta, the Space Girl, is very much like, tune in for part three.
Right.
So was it definitely like you were planning to do it as a trilogy, or were you just leaving it open-ended, or did you just want to do one to start and see how it did?
No, you know, when I signed to do the first book, it was a two-book deal.
Oh, interesting.
And so they wanted two Zeta books, and I did this first Zeta book, but I did, with that ending, I had my first book kind of worked out, and then but I hadn't had much in mind for the second story. And then the first book changed as I wrote it, like quite a bit. And I had problems starting the second book because I got to the end of the first book, and I like leaving the characters there. Like, it's satisfying to see your characters running off into the sunset, obviously going to have more adventures. And you know, there's that fear of like maybe the adventures that everybody imagines for them are going to be better than whatever I come up with next, you know. So I struggled with the second book for a long time. But it turned out, I mean, I think it, like, at the end of that journey, it took a long time, but it went well in the end. In the telling of the second book, that's when it kind of became definitely a trilogy.
Yeah.
And you know, I could have had her anyway. It does. Yeah, it ends on a cliffhanger.
It does, a pretty big one.
yeah. So, and it really and the third book, the writing of it went spookily well.
It was, wow. Because, yeah, you just finished it, right?
Yeah, I just turned it in. But when I was at in the writing phase, where I was banging away on the keyboard, I was like, I can't believe this is going so great. You know, like, and I was, like, listening to music, having a really fun time just writing. And it was because in the first two books, I laid a lot of the groundwork for this third one.
True.
Like, maybe even subconsciously. And so it turned out really well. The third book was actually a blast to work on.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So when is that supposed to be out?
I guess, like, a year from now.
Right?
It's a hard wait.
Yeah,
when you turn it in. Because, like, now, you know, I'm out talking about book two.
Right.
Which I turned in the other year.
Oh, wow.
Back, you know, so ago, and then my mind is all on this third book that I just finished. So having that lag in there is something I'm still getting used to because, you know, in the web comics world and when you just make mini comics, you get this instant gratification. You finish something, you can throw it out there to the people, maybe a smaller audience, but it's still in the forefront of your mind when you finish and post it. So
are you going to keep up with kids' books after Zeta? Do you love kids' comics?
I like all kinds of things, and that's a good question. the what I'm working on now is a children's picture book.
Oh, wow.
Because when I signed up to do the third book, it was another deal where I was going to do two things, and it was the last Zeta book plus a picture book for the other side of the imprint. And so that's what I'm working on now. And then, like, I just recently made a list of kind of upcoming projects there in my brain. And there's a lot of different stuff, and it's different age groups.
Right.
Some of it's, like, maybe more young adults. I've got a couple, like, definitely grown-up stories that I'm working on. I've got, like, I don't know if it'll ever come into being, but there's even, like, a superhero kind of story that I'm working on. Because I think a lot about superheroes.
I saw you doing some sketches.
And I'm going through another one of my superhero. It seems to, like, come in phases. Like, for a while, I'll forget about it, and then I'll go back into it, and I'll think, like, oh, I just love superheroes. And it's like just the idea of superheroes, and I'm having a really good time. Yeah, right now I'm kind of redesigning Justice League, Ben Hatke style, maybe. I don't know.
Nice.
And it's fun. It allows me to say, like, this is what I like about, you know, superheroes and these specific characters, and this is what I'd rather, you know, throw out, you know. So anyway, being pretty liberal with the stories and stuff.
Wow.
So anyway, yeah, that's so I've got all kinds of projects, like, on the horizon and things I want to do. I'm having a lot of fun. I have been doing these robot comic strips on my blog, and those I would like to. That's like, I mean, the other side of comics is like the strip, and like I feel like a comic strip is almost like the poetry or short essay of comics, you know, because you have to put a lot into a small space. And I used to, when I got into comics at first, when I was, you know, my kid's age, I drew, it was a newspaper strip.
So that's
I drew
how you
newspaper
got into,
strips,
yeah.
And I was doing stuff that was basically ripoffs of Garfield and Calvin Hobbes, but with ducks and birds and stuff. And I'm kind of having a fun time coming back to that, just the limitations of, you know, you got 6 panels, 8 panels, that's it.
Right.
Well, and short strips are so much more relevant now than they maybe were like 10 years ago, now that everybody's on the internet reading comics.
Yeah, truly, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it can even find us like a small but like audience, but that really gets it. And so you know that if you, because like, yeah, when you're going for everyone and it's in the newspaper, that's why those strips maybe are so stale, is because like,
yeah, they're,
you
know, so like, homogenized.
And the audience is, they expect, you know, the Garfield joke, which is the same telling of
right, has to kind of hit the lowest
every other Garfield
every
joke
time.
That there was.
It's comforting.
But this, like, exactly. But with the like strips now, if you're doing it for like a webcomic, you can just, you can be weird and like, you know, that those, you know, 150 people who really like that what you're doing there will get that, you know.
Right.
They're already with you,
right?
It's starting out, so that's been fun. And anyway,
cool. Well, sounds good. I think we're excited to see what you're gonna come out with,
and yeah,
we should probably get this signing started.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks.
All right, cool. Well, thanks to Ben, and thanks for everybody to listen, and we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah.